Hey,
Hello.
what's up, man? How you doing?
Very well.
I started my career with no real connections in tech or startups or anything like that. I cold emailed my way into an early role with Uber Eats, did a little bit of everything there. It was like manually loading burritos into people's cars in a parking lot in the old version of Uber Eats, which wasn't even a full marketplace. It was like you could pick from a couple restaurants in a city, and we would load up 100 cars at that restaurant and send it out to the whole city. But yeah, cold emailed my way into that, and then ended up building an analytics and like data science team there. Left at the end of 2018 after about 2.5, a little under 2.5 years. Then was a product manager at Airbnb, helped build Airbnb Plus. Did that for a year and a half, but Plus got shut down during COVID. You can't go into people's homes in April 2020. And we were like doing in-person work in people's homes. So after that, got laid off and knew I wanted to start a startup. Looked at the other big tech jobs that were available. It wasn't super interesting to me. So what I ended up doing was just getting a group of people together who I had met through living in SF and booking a co-living house for us in Tulum in Mexico. And I think it was a group of 19. We all came together for that first kind of like month, managed to convince them to do so during the height of the pandemic. And we just started building things when we got down there. And the energy was really electric. After quarantining for a couple months, getting in person with builders was awesome. And we were posting about it on social media. And so, people who were still quarantining were super either interested or like outraged or whatever at these crazy people in Mexico, building stuff together. So two of the guys who were down there with me decided they were interested in the project too. So the three of us turned it into a company and ran that for about 2.5 years. I left in December, company shut down in March. And during that time, we raised a Series A from Andreessen Horowitz. We raised a venture fund and invested in, 50 or so of the companies that came through these like month-long cohort-based programs we were running for founders. And yeah, so that's what I was doing before, what I'm doing now.
Yeah, I mean, I have a couple of questions because I always love hearing these stories, but then I wonder and like, how did you actually pull that off, right? I mean, casually, yeah, I sent a cold email, but I want to hear the details. Like, who did you send the email to? How did you find their email address? How many cold emails did you send? I mean, give me all the nitty-gritty details because I don't know, like that's my business, cold email. So I love any story involving it.
Yeah, I mean, let's see. So this was Q3 of 2016. I had worked as a software engineer at a small healthcare startup in Philadelphia, where I'm originally from, for a year. I didn't love that, so I left and I started like an agency that I had been running for about 9 months. But agency was good some months, bad other months, and I was actually driving for ride sharing in my spare time just to make some extra money. So this was like, wanted something a little more stable, was interested in what Uber was doing, loved the brand. And Postmates had actually come to Philadelphia, and I was using Postmates all the time. And I was like, whoa, this food delivery thing, it's not just Grubhub anymore. Maybe there's something to this new model that people are running. And so I was just applying to a lot of big tech jobs. For the Uber one, I was very interested in this food delivery concept. I saw that this Uber Eats was like a new thing at the company. There were only a couple roles listed for it in a couple different cities. I looked on LinkedIn and I saw, who was working on it. And it looked like there were some folks in their Santa Monica office in LA. And so I sent in a cold message to try to get that role. And thankfully they responded. And I don't even think I was like the most qualified person or anything, because they said they'd been trying to keep the role open, or they kept it open for like 3 months or 2 months or something before that. It was just that I think got along really well with the team. And because it was so early, they were like, oh, well, let's take a shot on this guy and let's see if he can rise to the occasion. And so 2 weeks later, I had packed up all my stuff and put it all in my car and drove across the country and found an apartment in Santa Monica while I was driving across the country. Moved it in and kickstarted the kind of the real fast moving phase of my career.
Really cool. Yeah, that's awesome. And I mean, what was the agency you were running at the time?
Oh, it was just like we did like web development, we did digital marketing. Honestly, it was just like a hodgepodge of things. And I was just like, oh,
Yeah.
didn't like this software engineering job I just went to college for. How can I make some money? Well, cool. I know how to do marketing because I was in the, you know, electronic music, DJ, music production scene before that. So I kind of saw how that worked on social media. And yeah, that was pretty much it.
No wonder you were broke at the time.
Yeah, no, I didn't really know what I was doing at the time. Going through Uber, working there for a couple years, working at Airbnb, and then obviously starting my own venture-backed startup gave me quite a boot camp in how to make things actually work.
Yeah, that's it's not as easy as it sometimes seems on Twitter, right?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, I feel like now I know how to build anything. I feel like I go out and build any type of company, but before you go through it, it's really hard to know what to do. So yeah, the people on Twitter who are saying, oh, it's just as easy as downloading my $20, $40 ebook and then you'll be able to make $50,000 a month. You know, that's, I don't know how realistic that is.
Yeah, but it's a sexy dream. So people will forever click that like button on stuff like that. It's just a platform that's shifting, right? Now the Shopify fake screenshots are on TikTok, I guess. Yeah, and I can imagine like when you were doing the launch of saying that you got access to so many great resources, seeing how different people operate. I mean, I'm very jealous of the education you got there, to be honest. I can only imagine how amazing that must have been. But again, I'm very curious how you pulled this off. I mean, the earliest days, right? How did you get together as this group? How did you find each other? Like, who initiated this?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, Launch House was incredible because, you know, we brought, I think, over 700 founders through our programs over the course of the 2.5 or so years, all of them building amazing companies. Many, you know, have gone on to raise significant funding. And so getting to osmosis some learnings from all of them into myself was awesome. As far as how I got started, yeah, so I had been traveling around a little bit in the beginning of the pandemic. This is like July of 2020. Was working on a couple different startup ideas with a couple different people, none of which were, you know, incredibly exciting or just like little projects that we were running. And I just wanted to be near more people in person. I'd actually moved from SF to New York and I was sleeping in like the spare room of one of the people who I was working with on a mattress on the floor to just kind of, you know, have that in-person builder early stage energy. And so, yeah, ended up booking this house because a friend of mine had tried to book a house like this. He booked a big house in rural Utah and tried to get a bunch of people together for it, you know. Some interesting people were interested in it, but I think the tough part was no one really wanted to go live in rural Utah for a month. And so I was like, how can we do this in like a really cool place? He was kind of burned out on the idea, wasn't interested in it anymore. And so I booked a place in Tulum and, you know, basically just went on a sales kick and tried to convince, I think I reached out to like 70 or 80 people, somehow managed to get 19 of them interested in coming down with me. And did sales calls, had like a long COVID policy and a Google Doc about like what protections we'd be taking. And yeah, just convinced them all to come over one-on-one outreach. And then when we got down there, the energy was, you know, electric. Everyone was building stuff right away. It was good to see people in person again. And so after about a week down there, we got written up in TechCrunch and New York Times reached out and had a quote from us in one of their pieces. And at that point, you know, we started to realize, hey, maybe there's something to this. And so two of the other guys who had come down said they were interested in working on it too. So I brought them onto the project.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I mean, that is an incredible close rate, right? Definitely. I can tell this was not pure cold outreach you were doing, right? I'm assuming these were people, a lot of these people were someone you met before, right?
Yeah, some of them I had known, I met in person in San Francisco, others I'd talked to online before, and then a few of them actually recruited other people to come as well, and basically just like I closed the deal on them, but the initial outreach had been done by someone else. So I wasn't even really thinking about it as a sales funnel or a process at the time. It was just like, oh my God, I just put $25,000 on my credit card. how do I convince enough people to come so that we can split the costs?
Yeah, I was about to ask, like, did you pay it all from your own pocket? I mean, did you book on Airbnb and you would have been able to cancel, like, if this wouldn't have materialized? Or how did you, like, think about the risk there?
I forget the cancellation policy on the Airbnb, unfortunately. But yeah, all on my personal credit card. And I really didn't think about the risk very much. I was just like, this is an awesome thing. I bet I can convince people to come down over the next couple of weeks and do it. And, you know, made the booking in July. It was for September, basically right after Labor Day. So yeah, I was able to make it a full house by like the second or third week in August.
Nice. Yeah, that's a very, very, very tight timeline. You pulled it off. I mean, that's incredible. And how did you manage to get all that publicity? Was it just you guys and girls sharing on social media and it got picked up naturally? Or did you do something more targeted to, like, move things forward?
No, I mean, we, you know, you put yourself back in the shoes of, you know, Q3 2020, right? People have been in their homes, some of them entirely in their homes for months at that point, right? Starved of human connection. No one's posting social media content of doing stuff outside because everyone's inside, right? And here we come. We're posting on Twitter. We're posting on Instagram. We started a brand around the house. Like, we were Launch House. We were the Launch House, right? And that made people kind of naturally interested. And then when they saw it was branded, they were like, oh, like, what's going on here? You know, this was also at the time of a lot of the TikTok creator houses in LA. So there was, you know, Hype House, or all those different ones, Sway House, all of them. And so there was interest in the concept. We were kind of applying that to startup world. And yeah, it just, you know, the press came naturally. We didn't do any reach out for it. They reached out to us when they saw our stuff on Twitter. Some of our first 100 or so Twitter followers were like fairly prominent people who were engaging with our stuff. So I'm sure they helped that out. But yeah, it was all organic.
Cool. Yeah, that's that's amazing when it works that way. But yeah, I can see how that happens given all the environment and it being a big thing at the time. And I think it still is, right? Maybe not as novel. So what I would be also very curious about, when you were working or living with so many different builders, did you see any patterns? Like, because I can imagine it must be incredible to see, like, on a daily basis, how these people work, different people work. And then, I mean, you can now check, where are they? What are they doing now? I mean, if you connect the dots, is there anything you can see now in terms of commonalities, like where people are successful now versus the one that didn't make it? I'm just super curious if you have any ideas.
The number, I'd say, really the number one thing is just like, how much were they working, right? Like, how hard were they grinding? We had one company come through the first house in Tulum. It wasn't a company when they came. It was just like random people who met at the house. They went on to go through YC, raise from Craft Ventures, a few others. And, you know, they've done amazing. They were kind of ahead of the whole AI wave that's currently everywhere. They were building with, you know, OpenAI tools back in 2020. They were just working all the time, right? They were grinding, they were building their product, they were looping in other people from their network to help out with it as they needed. They were just like really resourceful and dedicated. And so those are probably the two things I would say. You know, anyone who was more focused on, you know, going out to dinner in Tulum and things like that, or LA when we went to LA, or especially New York when we came here too. You know, those are the folks who maybe are not as far along with their startup or have abandoned the startup idea entirely for the most part.
Yeah, that seems logical to me. I mean, there's like this, sometimes the discussion pops up in terms of, should you work harder or smarter or whatever? Is it really necessary as a founder to work crazy hours and all that stuff? And for the most part, I think, yes, it definitely helps, right? that's the reality of it. You really need to want it more, and it is a lot of work, especially in the early days. And then once you have a team and stuff, it gets easier, right? So I mean, with the idea eventually not working as intended, I also would love to hear, like, what was your takeaway then? Because, or I mean, why didn't it work out as intended? Because the idea is great, like, I think, and I'm curious if you still think that's true. But at least from me, as a completely outsider, not knowing much, it seems like a very good idea, and it's a human desire, right, to be close to similar people, and I can totally understand the appeal of living with like-minded people. It's the reason why YC is doing so well and all that stuff, right? So yeah, just curious, like, what were your takeaways and how you think about the idea of Launch House now?
Yeah, I mean, you know, being a founder is super lonely. That's not going to change. You're trying to either change the world or just build a nice business, and you do it from your home or your apartment. And in the early days, there's not even a team to talk to, right? So it's always going to be this lonely thing. So anything that makes that easier is going to be valuable to founders. I think for us, we always knew that the main long-term value from what we were doing was the network and our ability to accelerate founders by investing in them, right? So we didn't have a venture fund when we started. We knew eventually we would have one, and that would drive the majority of the returns for the business in the long run. We actually structured it in a way so that the three of us were not the primary GPs on the fund. Actually, Launch House Inc. was the primary GP. So it would get 75% of the carry from any, you know, investments we made. So, and 100% of the management fees. So we knew that as we were able to raise fund two or fund three or fund four down the road, as long as the network kept growing, we'd be able to drive substantial value for that and return for our investors. But we also saw this like shorter term opportunity to build like a membership model business around the startup world, right? Somewhere between Soho House and Y Combinator, centered around first these co-living experiences, but eventually more of like kind of what Hampton has done now. And so we were building on that vision. I still think that vision's exciting. I love what Hampton's doing. But yeah, I mean, look, for us, we were very high profile. Andreessen Horowitz invested in us. We started in this like contrarian way of, you know, going in person during the pandemic. You know, also when you're running an IRL co-living business, there's going to be folks who, you know, join who maybe are not equipped to be in an IRL co-living situation. And, you know, we do our best to vet those up front, but you can't be perfect 100% of the time. So as long as we remove people quickly, whenever something happened, we would do that. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think the brand got really big, and I think it became a target for both individuals and for the media. And so ended up just not working out the way we had hoped it would. But I think the vision is super exciting. I'm trying to bring some of that energy in a new way into the founder community and the newsletter that I've started now. We're up to, you know, 70,000 subscribers for the newsletter, almost 500 paying members in our community. We're running events in person, we're running digital events, a fireside chat later today with Emil Michael, former chief business officer of Uber. So super excited for where that's going, kind of carrying that torch in a new way.
That makes sense. Yeah. And also the connection to Hampton. I mean, it feels like a project you could have started, right? As a logical next step after Launch House, like a very good mix of the whole digital and real life experiences, and maybe do some wedding on the digital side and then only host it for some selected members or whatever the real life experiences. I mean, it's a very fine line, and I guess like that's a very real challenge, and you probably know it from every single meetup you're going to in real life, right? There are always some people where you're like, I don't really want to talk to this person, but it's very hard, like in person, to avoid someone versus like in an online setup, right? I can just leave the Zoom call. I always like schedule my meetings really for 15 minutes for this reason. So just just in case I don't enjoy it, and then if it's actually a good conversation or whatever is productive, then you can always go over time, right?
Well, I appreciate you carving out 45 for this then.
Yeah, was quite confident that this would work out, but you can always still like fake internet connection issues, right?
True.
Yeah, so let's talk about your new venture and the playbook you're using. I mean, I think that's very, very interesting, and there are a few people, I think, you trying to do something similar, but I'm very curious, like, who was your inspiration, or how you think about like the general approach?
Yeah, so the newsletter now, it's, you know, I think at this point it's the largest like advice and like resource column for startup founders. I think that's true. But we have 70,000 subscribers. We have a paid subscription as well, as I mentioned. And then I write a deep dive on like a specific topic that can help founders every Saturday. And then on Tuesday, I share like my top framework trend with some analysis, quote, and a couple other things every single week. And so, yeah, so it started as a side project while I was at Launch House. It actually started in September of last year, but I, you know, was just running it as like a side project to draw attention to the brand we were building for Launch House. The idea was, if we can elevate my personal brand, that will attract more people to Launch House as well. But ended up keeping it going even after I left the company. And in, I'd say Q1 of this year, really realized that it could be a big business on its own. You know, not a business I would ever need to raise venture capital for, and not like a multi-billion dollar business, let's say, but at least a really good size cash flowing business that I could run indefinitely. And so decided to spend this year entirely focused on that and whatever came from it, right? I didn't know what that would be. I told myself, if I can get 50,000 subscribers by the end of the year, I'll feel really good about that. We hit that by July. And so now the new goal is 100K by the end of the year. We'll see if that happens. But currently pacing towards it for like late November to early December, somewhere around there. Anyway, yeah, so went full time on it in like mid-March. And during that time, we've grown from about, you know, somewhere between 10 and 15,000 subscribers to now the 70,000, grown through social media, content marketing, swaps with other newsletter writers, paid ads, and lead magnets, and a whole bunch of things. We tried just about every growth strategy for newsletters you can, double down on what's worked. So that's been my main focus. And then I launched the community at the very end of May and started running events over the summer. We're going to be expanding the events significantly in Q4. And then just recently launched our first like product around the email list for the founders, where it's called Megaphone. Basically, it's a managed marketplace for organic content amplification on Twitter and LinkedIn. If you subscribe to Megaphone, you share your posts with us, we will make sure that they get in front of big creators to get more impressions on your content. And so that's been taking off like crazy for the past like 6 weeks or so. We've built some, you know, automated matching and routing and budget optimization systems on the back end. And on the front end, we've driven close to 20 million impressions already, which is nuts. So that's going to be the biggest revenue driver for the business by the end of the year. Maybe it makes sense to spin that out into its own company. If it keeps going at this rate, I'll probably have to. But my original goal for this year was just, let me write my newsletter and take it easy. Sort of like what like Lenny Ritchitsky has done with product management. I was like, how can I take that to startup founders? Not that he takes it easy, he does a ton of stuff, but he's always saying he's trying to take it easy. So yeah, that was my plan for this year. Ended up naturally getting a little bit bigger than that. And, you know, at this point, we'll see where it goes. Does it turn into some kind of personal holding company? Does it turn into a media company? I'm not totally sure yet. And I'm not focused on it, mostly just focused on growth.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, it gives you a lot of optionality, right? And this is why I think it's a very smart approach to just start, as you said, like with the media, just with the audience. And then you can use this as your launch pad, right? Just to test little ideas and monetize in a lot of different ways, right? And interestingly, I mean, you are monetizing with paid subscription, which I think is kind of unusual, right? Because it definitely makes it harder to grow, obviously, right? Every free piece of content you put out is potentially pulling in new people, versus a paywall is a paywall, right? So how do you think about this? And did you test how much like the paywall actually hinders growth and all that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, the value of a subscriber on a paid subscription is just so much higher than the value of that same subscriber that you monetize through ads, right? I think I estimated that every incremental subscriber that joins the newsletter for free, they're probably, worth in ad dollars about like 10 cents per issue, right? And I send like 9 issues a month, let's say, versus if they're a subscriber, they pay $15 a month for that single subscriber, right? So it's like 90 cents versus $15 a month. What's better for me? I should clearly be trying to drive as many people to subscription as possible, even if that means slower growth. With that being said, I try to make sure that the free side of the newsletter gets, enough love as well. Beehive has this really cool feature, the newsletter platform that I use has this really cool feature where you can paywall certain sections within a newsletter. And so on my Saturday issues, I'll do like one free one a month, and the other ones are paywalled entirely from like, 80% of the way up all the way down. And the Tuesday ones, they're like specific sections where I add extra analysis and like extra curated links and resources. And those are paywalled. And I make a note like, hey, upgrade if you want to see those. So those have been pretty good at driving conversion while not impacting like our unsubscribe rate or anything like that. But I think the main thing is, I run the newsletter and the community attached to it. And there's like a whole bunch of stuff that goes into the community: events, perks, founder connections, fundraising, priority access to our fundraising support platform that we have. And, eventually we've actually just started in the past 2 weeks building out like playbooks and guides to help founders with specific things. And eventually we'll launch like larger courses and stuff like that. But community members, my goal is to make that experience for them alone worth $15 a month. And also the bonus content in the newsletter alone worth $15 a month. Because at the end of the day, people want what they want, right? If you make the whole bundle worth $15, you're kind of hoping that people can like do the math in their head of like valuing the different components. If you just make each part worth $15, it becomes a way easier to say for someone like, oh, I want access to the community. Cool. Is that worth $15? Yeah, cool. I'll stick around.
Yeah, that's smart. And I mean, a lot of people never actually go through the motions and do the actual math, put in the numbers. And which is very interesting. And if you actually do it and calculate like how many subscribers do you need to make relevant money with ads in a weekly newsletter, right? It's crazy to hit any meaningful level. This playbook, the ad playbook, only really works with daily newsletters usually, right? Because they have a lot more inventory, and then the numbers work a lot better. So the whole ad and weekly newsletter only really works if you don't care about money too much, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, what I will say though, that like ads are a great way to get your revenue off the ground, right? I think we prioritized launching ads and like a small amount of my time for consulting first, because we knew that those would let us get more money in the door right away. If we were focused on subscription right away, we would not have gotten to the revenue level that we're at now in such a short period of time, not even close, because all my time would have been spent on the community before we had a steady amount of ad and consulting revenue coming in. I've tapered down on the consulting a bit and probably will cut it entirely by sometime early next year, just because the community and Megaphone are both growing pretty quickly and they deserve my full attention. But those revenue streams are great because they're higher ticket. You get more cash flow coming in and you can use that for growth or whatever else.
Yeah, absolutely. And are you still writing all the content yourself?
Oh yeah, absolutely. 100% of the time, it's all me. I'm up at 2 a.m. on a Friday night, sometimes finishing the newsletter for Saturday morning. I think that's really important that it's in my voice and actually in my words.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very, very hard step if you ever want to take it, right? Getting that off your plate.
I mean, I don't know if I want to take it ever. Definitely not anytime soon. I have a trip to China coming up, China and Taiwan, where I'm going to be gone for over 3 weeks. And I'm in a sprint right now for the next couple of weeks to get all of my newsletter content, social media content, everything written and scheduled before then. So no days off until I leave.
Nice. So how do you come up with the actual content? Like, are you very systematic? Because I also have a newsletter, and the way I operate is like I just open my like the editor on Mondays and then I just go. I have actually no draft. I have nothing scheduled. It's always in the moment, and I just I just like it's one sitting and I just send it out and it's it is what it is. But it
Well,
sounds like you're a lot more structured, right?
I mean, I try to be, but sometimes I, as I said, I'll be up, you know, super late writing. So, but what I do is I have an idea bank that I actually keep in an Airtable database of all things. And I have a content calendar for the month that I use in there as well for like all my platforms all in one place. But where the ideas come from is, you know, some of them from my own experience. Like I tell like personal stories from my founder journey, but I also just listen to my readers and my users and what they want, what they're interested in. So I survey everyone who joins the newsletter as long as they're, you know, willing to take the survey. And I ask them about what topics they're interested in. I do office hours with my community every single week where I meet with, you know, four founders a week. And I'll hear what problems they're having. I think if you stay really in touch with your audience like that, you're able to have an unlimited supply of questions and topics to answer. I also do an intro call with every single member who joins the community, even though we're now up to almost 500. It's been a busy summer for these intro calls, but I think it's just really important to stay in tune with your audience.
Yeah, that's really smart, getting these calls scheduled. And I mean, it's one of the best ways to get ideas. I mean, also us talking, right? Just talking to people is such a good way, and definitely a better use of your time if you're looking for inspiration than Twitter, at least in my humble opinion.
Yeah.
All right, we are running out of time. I have this nice hard limit called the Zoom free plan, so just to make sure I'm not taking up any more of my guests' time than we scheduled. But thanks a ton. I mean, this was great. I really enjoyed it. Learned a lot. So thank you.
Yeah, man, this is great. Thanks for having me. Excited to continue following what you're doing. If anyone's interested in checking out my stuff, I'm on Twitter at Call Me Hauk. Newsletter is hauk.news. And the Megaphone service I mentioned is megaphone.network.
Perfect. I'm gonna link, of course, under the episode, put in all the links. So
Sounds good, man.
thank you. Talk soon. Bye.
See you.